Greetings, true believers. This is Stan Lee.
Hello, this is Marina Baccarin.
This is Luther Rickner, the Credible Hope speaking.
This is John Reese Davis.
This is Helen Slater.
Hi, this is Adrienne Barbeau, Catwoman from Batman the Animated Series. And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. Perfect.
Hello, Comic Book Central Nation. Welcome to Comic Book Central. I'm your host, Joe Stuber, once again celebrating the adaptations of our favorite comic book characters. This is where comic books come to life. Thank you so much for joining me for this first anniversary special. That's right. My goodness. It was November 8th, 2013, when I sent out the first transmission from the Comic Book Central lair with my special guest, well, the man who pretty much is responsible for the Marvel Universe as we know it, Stan the Man Lee. 50 episodes, 68 guests, and 77 countries later, we have arrived at this first anniversary celebration. Thanks to all of my fellow podcasters out there who've invited me to be a part of their shows to talk about Comic Book Central, get the word out. And I have to say, this show would not be possible without each and every one of you tuning in, downloading the show, streaming the podcast each and every week. I am truly grateful that so many of you have supported the show, not only by listening, but many of you have taken it upon yourselves to share the lair on Facebook and Twitter, and that has been fantastic. It might seem like a simple thing, but the results are noticeable. Each like and share, each retweet, that just gets the show in front of new listeners. Comic Book Central has grown because of you. And I thank each and every one of you for that. And if you're a new listener, well, welcome to the lair. Be sure to drop me a line at joe@comicbookcentral.net. Be sure to tell me what you think of the show. Subscribe in iTunes, post a review. All those things help to bring in a whole new audience. So let's keep this thing going. There are so many more episodes to be recorded, so much more comic book history to be discussed, and so much fun to be had. Hey, speaking of fun guests, that's what today's show is all about. Time to look back over the past year at some of those memorable moments from the show. And there were plenty of them. Trust me, I went through a bunch of them. A lot of big anniversaries over the past year as well. 75 years for Batman, Superman, Captain Marvel, and Marvel Comics. We got to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, with show creator Deborah Joy Levine, Ma and Pa Kent, Kay Callan, and Eddie Jones, and the Man of Steel himself, Dean Cain, swooped in from the Fortress of Solitude to hang out here in the lair. We talked about the show's decidedly different take on the Superman mythology, and we also talked about Dean's inspirations for his take on the classic character. Check it out.
I was very well aware of the Christopher Reeve version. There's no question. He was my Superman. I was very well aware of it. I didn't like the geeky part of it. Not to say that he didn't do a great job, but it always bothered me as a fan. It's like, I didn't like Clark being, you know, wussified, if you will. I liked the George Reeves version where he was more of a man. And I thought this was a great combination of the two.
That's one thing I was going to mention to you, because that's one thing I noticed in particular was that you had that George Reeves quality. I was going to ask if that was an influence, because he played the cool Clark Kent. He didn't. It was a pair of glasses. That's it. He didn't care if you knew it was the same guy or not. He's like, deal with it. You kind of look toward that a little bit more?
Oh, certainly. I would say without a doubt, my Clark Kent inspiration was the George Reeves version, and my Superman inspiration was the Christopher Reeve version. There's no doubt at all. But the way we came up with sort of the backstory, you know, his mom made this suit, et cetera, we had Clark Kent be the man. And then Superman was the device he used as an alter ego so that he could live a regular life when he was Clark Kent. And that was the device we used, the way we put the spin on it, if you will. And the other versions, you know, Superman is who he is, and then he hides as Clark Kent. So we sort of did the exact opposite.
Well, if there are two things you listeners have learned over the past year by listening to Comic Book Central, it is that, first, Superman is my favorite comic book character of all time. And two, Superman the movie, that's my favorite comic book movie of all time. Well, 2013 was the 75th anniversary of The Man of Steel, and it was the 35th anniversary of the Richard Donner-directed film starring Christopher Reeve. And we were able to celebrate in style with the executive producer of the film, Ilya Salkin, Kryptonian villain Non, Jack O'Halloran, and Jimmy Olsen, Mark McClure. In fact, these were not only some of my favorite interviews. From your messages, a lot of you liked them as well. I heard from my buddy and IndieCast partner, Keith Voss, regarding the Ilya Salkind interview. Keith writes, "Wow, 1 year of Comic Book Central. Congrats, my friend. Happy Centralversary. One of my personal favorite moments of the past year was, you guessed it, the Ilya Salkind interview. The whole thing. Especially when he talks about Superman's quote-unquote love. Always cracked me up. Many happy returns and happy Lairversary." Yeah, one of those should stick, right? Well, thanks for writing in, Keith. I'm going to go with Centralversary. I think I like that one. But it's not as catchy as Indieversary. By the way, happy 7th Indieversary to the IndieCast. Ed Dalista, his anniversary show is coming up right around the corner. I don't know, listeners, what do you think? Centralversary, Lairversary? Which one works? I'm going to have to get some ideas lined up for the second anniversary show, I think. Yes, Keith, you're right. Ilya Salkind did mention that scene, which was in the Richard Donner cut. He said to him, that was a mistake that Donner made. That's where Superman beds Lois with his superpowers intact. If you go back and listen to the interview as well with Ilya, I don't think that's the only time those two were at odds, but regardless. Ilya did mention that scene, and of course, I walked right into it. Take a listen.
In his cut, he makes love with her with his superpowers. Now that's a no in comic book lore. You never have a superhero make love with a mortal.
I'll ask why.
Why? Because what? Okay, can we be a little vulgar? No.
Clean it up for the family audience, but I'm sure you can use
okay,
a euphemism.
Well, he makes love with her, and what if when he has his pleasure, he shoots her off in the sky? Come on. I mean, he's Superman, right?
You know, I'll be honest, that never occurred to me.
Well, my dear friend.
That's why you're the executive producer, right?
Thank you very much, but that's why I also studied comics like a maniac, and there's never a comic book character, super, that does it with a human.
Yes, a truly memorable moment from one of the more memorable interviews right here on Comic Book Central. I don't think I'm ever going to watch the Richard Donner cut the same way again after that. Speaking of Superman the movie, though, stay tuned to the end of this episode of Comic Book Central for a special Superman the movie giveaway. That's going to be pretty cool. More Superman movie moments from the past year. This time, it's Superman 2, where in a very controversial move, the Salkinds replaced Superman director Richard Donner with Richard Lester. Now, when I had Jack O'Halloran on the show, I asked him about one of the strangest scenes in Superman 2. That moment was also a favorite of listener Douglas Meacham, who writes, "Joe, looking forward to your anniversary show. One of my favorite moments from your show is in episode 4 with Jack O'Halloran, where you describe the cellophane S scene to him, and his response was," well, Douglas mentions it there, but I'm going to let Jack say it in the clip. But Douglas does go on to say, "I laughed hysterically the first time hearing that." Well, Douglas, I'm not going to waste any time. Here's Jack's response to what was up with the cellophane S. I have to ask you this one question. There's a scene in the Fortress of Solitude where Superman appears, you take off full force at him, and he pulls off the cellophane S.
Oh, that was Lester's bullshit. That was Richard
Even
Lester.
As a kid... I love this film, and I'm watching it, and nobody saw this thing more than I did that summer. But even as a kid, I'm watching this going, what did I just see?
Yeah, well, that's what
Do you have any idea what that is?
Well, I don't know. It was Lester had this idea that Superman had a way of defending him. I don't know.
What is it? What
Nobody
is that
knew.
Thing?
I mean, I guess he had a layered S, you know? Yeah. I mean,
whatever
it's kind of stupid, whatever it was, is right.
Have you seen the Family Guy spoof on it?
I heard about it.
Okay.
I heard about.
Yeah, he's like, hey, that was irritating. Yeah, sure.
You know,
take
it was
that.
Just kind of it was kind of a dumb deal, man. But you know, so you're called upon to do your skills as an actor. You do shit like that. You know, that's what you're paid for.
All right, that just clears it up for me. I love that. 32 years later, and we finally find out why Superman had a cellophane S. Well, we kind of found out. I mean, it's Richard Lester's thing, but I know we can't blame it on Richard Donner. That much I do know. Strange superpowers aside, in my opinion, Christopher Reeve was the greatest Superman, and it's an opinion shared by many, including my three guests from the Superman films. Talking about the late, great Christopher Reeve are Jack O'Halloran, Ilya Salkind, and Mark McClure.
Let me tell you something. They will never find another Christopher Reeve. You're never going to... This kid... You got to understand something. Christopher never did anything before Superman.
Yeah.
He did A Love of Life. He did a couple plays in New York. But he was a Juilliard graduate, you know, come from a very wealthy family. And he was a 170-pound skinny kid. I talked to the trainer how to build him out. Build him to where when he puts that suit on, because he didn't want to wear any board underneath or anything. He wanted his own body. I said, build it where you can actually see a six-pack on him. And they did that. They trained him real smartly. And Christopher put on about 30 pounds and did it wisely. And he looked great. I mean, you can't deny the results, you know. He looked terrific. And he was just a natural Clark Kent Superman. I mean, it's going to be very difficult for them to find somebody to outdo what Christopher Reeve did.
What are your thoughts on working with the late, great Christopher Reeve?
Oh, man, I mean, my thoughts are sad as hell, because that was really a tragedy. The only thing that is extraordinary is that he became, I hate to say it because it sounds like a cliche, but he became the real Superman. He became a real Superman, a great man. If tomorrow, admitting, Warners would offer me to do a new Superman, I wouldn't do it. You know why? I don't think you can top Chris. He was Superman. He is Superman. He will be Superman.
For people that never got a chance to know him or, you know, not to know him personally, really, what was he like and what did you get out of that friendship that you had with him?
Chris was a serious stage actor. I mean, it was very important to him, and he trained with the best, and, you know, I don't come from any training. So I've got a lot of respect for anybody that is doing what he was doing, as far as taking a character and bringing him to life in a real way. To take a character and then make him believable, make you believe that he's real. That's the trick to acting. That's what I've always loved about acting is making these people real, making any, you know, when you're watching Celluloid, that you believe what you're watching, you believe the people that you're watching. And Chris, he was such God, so strong on the set. I mean, just a great guy to watch, a great guy to act with. I mean, because he was giving you everything. I mean, you just had to listen to him and react, and you're going to be in a safe place. And, off the set, when we were at parties and everything, he was the biggest goofball, great piano player, but just a real goofball that would just play tricks on everybody. You just have to keep your eyes open with him. And it was so good. And maybe that was just his way of getting as far away from the work, you know, where he can just be stupid and act idiotic, you know. And then, you know, when it comes time to get serious, he goes the other way so much that it's, you know, it's so intense. And I always thought that when he's going to be a director, that, you know, really, really watch it, because this guy is, from here on out, is going to do special things. And he really did. I mean, what he did, you know, for the last 9 years, he made it as special as he could, and he could have very easily just drifted into the abyss and not come out because it was so difficult for him to travel. But he really made an effort to keep his voice being heard and to try to do something with this tragedy. I mean, it was incredible in our lifetime for Christopher Reeve to go through what he went through. It's incredible. And just on that alone puts his lifetime above many.
Well, as Jack said in his interview, referring to the recent Superman movies, he said, they haven't dented us yet. And I cannot disagree with that. I totally agree with Jack O'Halloran on that. They are my personal favorites. It was world's finest at Comic Book Central this past year, from Superman's 75th anniversary to Batman's 75th. And I welcomed a lot of great Batman guests to the lair, but none more passionate than executive producer of the Batman movie franchise, the author of The Boy Who Loved Batman, Michael Uslan. Michael joined me for not only the 75th anniversary celebration of Batman's first comic book appearance, it was also the 25th anniversary of his passion project, the 1989 Batman film starring Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson. Now, Michael's book is a treasure trove of fantastic stories, and my interview with him was chock full of some of those amazing tales. Here's Michael on what kept him going through some of the rough times and trying to bring The Dark Knight to the screen for over a decade, and we get a glimpse behind the bat scenes. During that 10-year process, then, what were some of the challenges that you faced, and how did you overcome them?
Surviving, eating. These were some of the challenges I had in those 10 years from the time we bought the rights to the time we got the first film made. Every studio in Hollywood said no. They told me I was crazy. It was the worst idea they ever heard. Every door slammed in my face. They said, are you kidding? You can't do serious comic book movies. You can't do dark superheroes. You can't make a movie out of an old TV series. Nobody's ever done anything like that. And it was nothing but rejection. So
didn't
survival.
One executive throw Little Orphan Annie in your face?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Columbia. He said, Michael, he goes, Batman will never succeed as a motion picture because our movie, Annie, didn't do well. And I looked at him and I said, you mean the little redheaded girl who sings the song Tomorrow? He says, yeah. I go, well, what does that have to do with Batman? He says, oh, come on, Michael, they're both out of the funny pages. And that was my rejection from Columbia, topped only by my rejection from my alma mater, United Artists, where the guy there said, Michael, you're nuts. Batman and Robin would never be successful because the movie Robin and Marion didn't do well. Now, you might remember, Joe, that was a 1979 movie with Sean Connery and Audrey Hepburn about an aging Robin Hood and Maid Marian. So after 10
sure
years of, you know, trying to figure out what the hell he had said, truly, because they both had the word Robin
how,
in the title.
What kept you going? Like, why didn't you, like, what kept you going through all that? That had to be the most frustrating thing in the world.
That's an understatement. It's an understatement. So what kept me going? I would say it comes down to two things in particular. Number one, my mom raised me that when you believe in something, you see it through to the end. Or when you make a commitment, you see it through to the end. Case in point, Pee Wee League. I was 8 years old. Our coach used to scream at those of us who would strike out in the game. It was a nightmare for me, and I wanted to quit. My mother said, nope, you're going to see it through to the end. I'm sorry. We can talk to the coach and see what we can do, but you made a commitment to your teammates, and that's that. So that's the way I was brought up. Number two, I couldn't have done it without the support of my wife and my family. Everybody was behind me. And it's important, Joe, because when you go through 10 years of virtually everyone telling you you stink, that your work is bad, your ideas are lousy, you've got to really look deep inside yourself and go, okay, is the whole world right and I'm wrong? Am I just being stubborn? Or do I absolutely positively believe in this and believe in myself? And I kept coming up with the second answer, and I kept finding ways to hold on by my fingertips.
Pittsburgh's own Michael Keaton, I'm from that area. I loved when he was cast as Batman. I thought this was going to be the coolest thing, but you did not think so right off the bat, correct?
No, I was apoplectic. Okay. I really was.
For good reason. I mean, he's Mr. Mom.
Yeah, that was my first impression. You know, the fans went nuts. It was the first case of what has become a frequent thing now, a fan outrage. And there was no internet. There was just no internet, no computers back then.
Could you imagine if there had been? You would have blown up the internet.
Yeah, oh, God, I couldn't even imagine it, because this came over conventional press.
Yeah.
And I thought they were going to surround Warner Brothers with torches and pitchforks. That's really what it came down to. But because I was fanboy in the inner circle and had access, I could ask Tim about it, and he was able to explain his vision for it, which really is the root of his genius. He says, you're worried about him not just being a comedian. He's a great actor. And in order to prove that to me, they showed me the rough cut of Clean and Sober. All right, I came back. I said, you're right. He is a great actor. I take it back. But he's my height. Where's the muscles? For God's sake, where's the square jaw that Batman has? And Tim said, you know, going from one medium to another, it's not a square jaw that makes a Batman. He said, I can cheat the height. I can carve musculature into a costume. But in order to be the first truly dark and serious comic book superhero movie, to have an audience accept it and not laugh at it, we need to do two things. He says, number one, we've got to make Gotham City the third most important character in this movie from the opening frames. Number two, once they believe in Gotham City, they must believe in Bruce Wayne. He says, this movie's not about Batman. This movie has got to be about Bruce Wayne. And we need to show a Bruce Wayne so driven, so obsessed, to the point of being psychotic, that audiences will buy it and say, yes, that's a guy who would put on a bat suit and go out and fight a guy like the Joker. With Bruce Wayne, you had to really, really go to the nth degree of showing his quirkiness, of showing the trauma that gave birth to this Batman persona.
If you're listening to this show on the premiere date, November 8th, and you're near an AMC theater, tomorrow, November 9th, select AMC theaters will be showing the 1989 Batman film. That's right, the 25th anniversary celebration continues. And if you've never seen the movie on a big screen, oh my goodness, wait till you get a load of Jack Nicholson as the Joker. And when Michael Keaton first says, I'm Batman, ugh, chills, good stuff. Be sure to check it out. Now, one of the most enjoyable aspects of producing and hosting Comic Book Central this year was taking the show on the road and meeting up with a lot of fellow podcasters and a lot of celebrity guests. From Connecticut Comic Con to the Steel City Con and Monster Bash in Pittsburgh to the Cincinnati Comic Expo right here in the Buckeye State, the Lair was everywhere. Here are some clips from a few of those adventures. First stop, Connecticut Comic Con, where I met up with Max Hernandez, who plays S.H.I.E.L.D. agent Jasper Sitwell in Captain America: The Winter Soldier. Max talks about a surprising revelation in the summer blockbuster. In Cincinnati, Empire Strikes Back's John Morton drops some next-level nerd knowledge on me about his character Dak. Then things get a little awkward in Pittsburgh at the Steel City Con with Star Trek's Marina Sirtis, and Monster Bash with Mystery Science Theater's Joel Hodgson. Take a listen. He portrayed Agent Jasper Sitwell in the Marvel movies, also the Marvel one-shots, and the hit TV show Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He is Maximiliano Hernandez. Do friends call you Max?
Max.
Is it Max?
I'm Max. You know, Max. I've had enough people butcher my name, so I'm always
Was it passable?
You did a great job. I was actually very surprised. You did handled it very smoothly.
Max, welcome to Comic Book Central. We appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you.
Hail Hydra.
Hail Hydra.
My goodness.
You know what's funny? I want to put this out there. I actually never say Hail Hydra in the movie. And it was so funny. Like, people are always like, oh my God, can you whisper it? People have come up to me on the street, can you whisper it to me in my ear? And they want a picture taken of like me whispering. And I'm like, first of all, I don't whisper it to anyone's ear.
Right.
It gets whispered in my ear, and I never respond to him. I just give him a smile, you know?
Oh, okay. So are we breaking some news here? So like maybe you're not totally committed to the movement or anything?
No, I'm just pointing out a fact that people can go and see the movie and see that I never
are you a triple agent or what are we
could, I could be a triple agent, I could be a double agent, I could be, you know,
whatever
or might not even be Sitwell at all,
whatever you're contractually obligated to be.
I'm contractually obligated to just keep my mouth shut.
You're in the Marvel universe, you can't say anything.
Yeah.
Dak Ralter
Yeah
is the character we're talking about. This is Luke's gunner.
in the on Hoth in the snowspeeder.
Yeah.
And what happened? What happened with Dak? Was he, you know, did should he have banked something? Or, well, I guess Luke's flying. He's just the gunner. So, I mean, are you blaming Hamill for this? What's the deal?
No, I think it was the Incom engineers that designed the combat system. They didn't get the software right, and so
no shields.
We lost fire control in the shields. So, you know, blame it on the contractor. It's, you know, it's one of those waste, fraud, and abuse things.
Are these the same contractors on the Death Star that left the panel open?
Oh no! This was Incom. These are the guys that walked away with the Death Star plans and the. The X-Wing fighter plans. The funny thing is that the fans, you know, when I first started doing these appearances 10, 15 years ago, they'd sort of say, hey, you know, was Luke going back for his lightsaber, or was he going back to save Dak? What do you think? And I'd throw it back to the fans and say, okay, let's take a poll. What do you all think? About 90% would say he's going back for the lightsaber.
Yeah.
The lightsaber, rather.
The lightsaber,
Only 10% would go back to
Dak. Yeah, I guess he hasn't really check to see if the body is colder. It's like he's, could you like done something with him?
Tim Zahn says that you have to look at this issue of canon and extended universe and the films all through the same lens, which is that they are reports of things that happened in the galaxy. And all good journalists, as you would know, Joe, sometimes get reports that are incorrect or inaccurate, and so there's a lot of retconning. A revisionist history that goes back. So I would argue this, that Dak really didn't die. You know, it seemed that way from the documentary film of, what happened on Hoth. But in fact, he was retrieved by a rescue squad, and he was taken quickly to a Bacta tank because he possessed either a holocron or a data card that had all vital information on the Rebel Alliance. And so that's what Luke Skywalker was going back for, was Dak.
Okay.
Because he had it, you know, in his flight suit.
So are you saying there's like maybe the AT-AT walkers, they have hollowed out feet?
Oh, they
so
do.
Maybe it just didn't. Okay, so yeah, it just sort of like was a dome.
Also,
over
it was a snowbank, and it just kind of pressed.
It protected him.
Yeah,
and
so
oh, wow.
He was okay.
And so Dak's fine.
So Dak came back to life.
Wife and kids?
Wife and kids.
Sitting there, you know, enjoying life.
He came down to this galaxy, and he's now consulting in Washington, D.C., and he's, you know.
J.J. Abrams calling you now?
J.J. Abrams would have to call, you know, Vint Cerf, I think, to find me.
You played an empath for the better part of 18 years. What am I feeling right now?
Don't make me slap you.
I was going to say gratitude. I was going to say immense gratitude for having you join us on the show
today.
Well,
thank you. And I was thinking
so
something totally different.
So you've been at comic book conventions too long.
I have. I was thinking it was going to be something smutty.
I'll give you another shot. What am I thinking?
It's time for me to wrap up.
If you were going to lay odds on it, what are the odds that we're going to see Joel and the bots again on the satellite, love?
Well, like I said, I'm not going to be the host. Do you know what I mean?
Just on the deck. On deck.
What does that mean, though? You mean come back as the president of Earth City?
You pop up on Earth.
Is that what you're saying?
We've got it. You've got.
Are you saying I'm the president of Earth City and I come back?
Sure.
I think that's very likely, but I'm telling you, it's a big step backward just to make it about the original cast.
Yeah.
You've driven a groove into that record by watching Mystery Science Theater repeatedly over and over, and you can't get out of it. And I'm here to get you out of it. It's not going to be Joel or Mike with the bots. It's a new guy.
Is this an intervention?
Yes,
is
I am. I'm breaking in, and we've gathered together your family and friends
you're
to stop
to a guy
you.
That handed you his membership card.
I know. I'm telling you, you've got to. You're going to have to start seeing the world in a different way because I'm not going to do that.
I don't like
because
change.
That's
I'm
backwards.
Old. This is a place
you,
of
and,
love.
And
know.
You're old, but we're old too, man. So it's time to hand it over. It's like we're grouchy 50-year-olds, man. It's time to let young people do it.
Time for another favorite listener moment. This time we hear from Mariano Santangelo. I actually had a chance to meet up with Mario and his family this summer at Connecticut Comic Con. Got to hang out in the Indiana Jones Chachapoyan Temple. That was pretty cool. Mariano writes, "Happy anniversary, Joe. I am so glad you're able to celebrate such a milestone. Your interviewing chops and out-of-this-world knowledge make every interview unique and very entertaining. My favorite moment is every time I hear you welcoming us to the lair. My favorite interview is episode 17, Jeffrey Bell, where the chemistry of the interview was so strong that one would think you guys were already friends. There are many other moments that I really enjoyed, mostly when the interviewee takes the time to acknowledge the great time he or she had during the chat and how much you know. One idea I have is if you can share with us the process to get to the talents, how you contact them, the time limits, a look behind the scenes, what's behind the lair's door. Just a thought. Well, thanks for writing in, Mariano. It was a blast to meet up with you and your family at Connecticut Comic Con. That was fun. Hey, let's see, a peek behind the lair's door? Okay, well, let's just say in order to do this podcasting thing, I found that equal parts patience and perseverance really go a long way in booking guests. You asked about time limits. Time limits really have kind of run a wide range. So they've ranged from very brief windows that I have to whatever works. So sometimes I get those brief windows. I got to get right to the comic book stuff. Typically, I try to go back and start at their early career, some other roles, but sometimes I got to get right to the comic book stuff. But I do try to get a sense of that up front before the interview to make sure that I get to the information I need to get to before time runs out. Sometimes I'm chatting with someone on a break from working, so there's a limited amount of time. Others, like the Michael Rosenbaum interview, well, he was just relaxing at home, grabbing a cup of coffee while I was grabbing a cup of coffee, so he had time to relax and kind of reflect on some things. Now, as far as contacting them, for the most part, it's reaching out to publicists, managers, agents, and then sometimes those contact people become other contact people, and then it goes back to the original contact people. So that's why I say patience and perseverance are really essential in doing this. So, and I'm going to be honest, there are still some folks out there I'm trying to book. I've been trying to book them from the pre-production phase of Comic Book Central, so it's been a little while. Hopefully we'll have them on the show soon. But yeah, again, patience and perseverance. Other times, it's easier than you expect. I'm surprised how many guests I can contact directly through Facebook. And I have to say, having Stan Lee as a guest on your premiere episode, that does open up a lot of doors, I'm not going to lie. I actually spoke with Stan years ago about Comic Book Central. He said at the time, if there's anything he could do to support the show, to let him know. Years later, when I launched the podcast, I reached back out to him. And even though he wasn't doing many interviews these days, he is a man of his word, and he came through. He had absolutely no reason to do a sit-down interview for a startup podcast, one with no listeners yet, hadn't been launched in no countries, let alone 77 countries, but he did it anyway. That is what Stan Lee is all about, and I am truly grateful for his time. So yeah, that did help out a lot in being able to talk to other people. So I hope that gives you a little bit of behind the scenes here at Comic Book Central. Now, as for your favorite moment, yep, I like that interview as well with Jeffrey Bell. I even tried to pry some level 7 shield information out of executive producer Jeffrey Bell during the speed round. Check it out. Speed round for Jeffrey Bell. Are you ready?
I'll try.
Can we expect more appearances by Samuel L. Jackson?
That's level 7, sorry.
I knew I wasn't up there yet. You got me at Fitzsimmons, don't you? All right, level 5. That's fine. In the writer's room, have you kicked around the idea of having Robert Downey Jr. or Tom Hiddleston on the show?
We've kicked around the idea of having everyone who ever lived possibly to be on the show.
Way to keep it broad. You brought this up earlier. Sky is an 084 in one of the episodes you've written, Object of Unknown Origin. Will we see a resolution of that mystery this season? Kind of hinted that that would be the case. I'm assuming that's so.
I'm saying we'll continue to move that ball down the field.
Will we find out her superpowers this season?
Who said anything about superpowers?
Ah, so close, so close. On Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this season, will there be any tie-ins to Captain America, Winter Soldier?
No, not all heroes are super. Not all heroes are super.
I think she is. On Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., will there be any tie-ins to Captain America, Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy, or The Avengers, The Age of Ultron?
God, I hope Joss throws us a bone. I mean, that's... That's 2 years from now, so you know we need to still be.
Well,
on
Captain
the
America
air.
Is right around the corner, so can we expect a little bit of Captain America crossover?
I don't know. You know, it's right.
Falcon flies know. Through. You know, just quick shot, little freeze frame. All right, will we ever meet Coulson's former girlfriend?
Ever.
Ever.
You know, down the road, anything's possible. You know, it sounds like the kind of story we would do someday.
Is she Catherine you know, Bishop? Thought I could sneak that one in there. All right. By your laughs, I could tell that I'm still at level five. All right. Is the Clairvoyant based on a Marvel character, or is it somebody completely original to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
That's level seven.
Have you talked to Tim Blake Nelson about an upcoming episode, being cast for an upcoming episode?
Level seven.
What is your confidence level in season two of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Simultaneously 100% and oh my God, please.
That's a great answer.
But that's true. That's true on every show I've ever. Like every year I ran Angel, we barely came back. It was critical darling, and everyone loved it. And because we were on the WB, we were like number 100 every week. And so they'd always wait for the development. Go, do we have anything better? No, we don't. Okay, let's stick with Angel because they loved it, not because we made them a lot of money. I think this is too good a show, frankly, to not bring back. Not my call. But I think we're telling really great stories. I think they just keep getting better. I think our numbers are actually really good when you factor in Live Plus 3, Live Plus 7. And so let's say I'm hopeful that we're coming back, but I don't know anything. Nobody ever says anything ever because it's Marvel. And, you know.
We talked about the security levels.
I think the government can learn a little bit. They can learn a little something about security from Marvel.
So we've heard.
Marvel should be doing security at the Sochi Olympics. That's all I'm going to say.
And finally, before Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. ends its run, whenever that may be, will we see a cameo by the original Nick Fury, David Hasselhoff?
He is the original?
Yes, sir. Did I just give you an idea for an episode?
That would be, you know, you mean if we do a Bizarro universe, if we do a Bizarro...
You get the Hoff.
You know, where they wake up and everybody's different, like on Seinfeld, where they had... Yes. And, you'll see Fury, and he's this white guy with the patch.
He's David Hasselhoff.
This, you know, with the Hoff, anything's possible, right? Hey. You never count the Hoff out.
You can't count the Hoff out, that is for sure. And, hey, we did get a huge Captain America crossover in episode 17 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Episode 17, wait, that was Jeffrey Bell's episode of Comic Book Central. It was coincidental. Episode 17 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was titled Turn, 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 and it actually opens with clips from Captain America, the Winter Soldier. The whole Marvel universe was tied together, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been in overdrive ever since. Love the show. Good pick, Mariano. Enjoyed revisiting that episode. Now, Mariano did mention one other thing that guests have commented on, and it's something I really appreciate. That's when the guests comment on how much prep work that I do for the show. Yeah. I know a lot of that stuff over the years has been bouncing around the old noggin, but, and here's another look behind the scenes of Comic Book Central, I do a lot of homework before the interviews. I have to unlock some of those things that have been buried up in the brain cells. As my IndieCast buddy Keith Voss has said about the show, he said it's kind of like inside the actor's studio for comic books, and that is exactly the feel I was going for. So yeah, a lot of homework, a lot of prep work. But it's fun. It's fun to do. Rewatching all those movies, the TV shows, checking out blogs and fan websites for obscure trivia, pouring through my old Starlog magazines for comments from 25 years ago, bringing those out, researching current projects for actors, producers, directors, writers. It's fun stuff. And sometimes I even surprise the guests. Here are Star Trek's Jonathan Frakes, Ilya Salkind, from Fantastic Four, February on Comic Book Central, Doctor Doom, Joseph Culp, and an impressed and maybe a little freaked out Helen Slater. One of your early roles was as the Star-Spangled Avenger, Captain America.
Wow, you've done a little research, haven't you?
Well, it is Comic Book Central. That's what we do here, so I would not be doing my duty if I didn't.
In the late 70s, I used to go over to 575 Madison Avenue with my friend Charlie Davis, who played Spider-Man. We'd sign out our costumes, including my garbage can lid shield and plastic clip-on Captain America wings, and we'd go to open comic book stores and 7-Elevens in different parts of the great middle America.
And the White House as well, too, right?
Well, the White House was the best of the gigs. That was the Rosalind and Amy Carter environmental lawn party. That's Stan was there, and the Hulk, and that was the peak of my Captain America experiences. The 7-Elevens in Omaha were the other end of the spectrum.
That wasn't the
riding
like the
in on the
family.
Front. Well, you ride in on the front of a rented Taurus driven by a Andy Frame rental security guard, and you bounce up into this sad little parking lot with your garbage can lid held valiantly in front of you.
You gave it your all, though. As an actor, you got to commit, right?
You had to commit.
Yeah, and the great part is your face is covered.
And the great part is we made $50 a day.
Well, how can fans find out more about you? Websites, appearances, projects?
I keep them posted on my Twitter feed on Jonathan S. Frakes. That's it. I don't really have a Facebook. Or they can follow you. You obviously know what the hell's going on.
You keep me posted. I'll keep them posted.
Fair enough.
Interesting casting note when we're talking about Clark and Lois. Lau Wagner and Linda Carter come in to test for these roles. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Boy, you did your homework, man. Lyle Wagner comes in for Soupy.
They're huge on Wonder Woman at this point.
They're huge. Linda Carter comes to see me. I was at the Beverly Hills Hotel pool. She comes. You know, my mouth falls on the floor. She was absolutely gorgeous.
Well, you know, I tell you what, we primarily want to talk about your work as Dr. Doom on the Fantastic Four movie, which we all love. We'll get to that shortly. But that was not your first time performing in the world of superheroes, I don't believe. Was your first acting gig on the final episode of The Greatest American Hero?
Oh, my goodness. Boy, you do your homework. It was indeed.
Vanity Says the Preacher, I believe, yeah, was the episode title. The final episode of season 3. Written and directed by?
By my old man, Robert Culp.
Oh, the legendary Robert Culp.
I was a young actor in New York, doing plays and training, and my old man did me a solid, you know, and my brother too, actually.
I've seen this referred to online as the Culp family reunion.
Yeah.
Let's see if I got all this right. You portrayed Roberto Del Vera, also portrayed a young General Del Vera, your own father, in film reel. You go back in that. Your brother Jason's in it.
Yes.
You played Francisco Del Vera, your brother. And then in that old newsreel footage, is it your brother Joshua?
My brother Joshua played Bill Maxwell, played my father.
And he looks just like him.
He looked more like him than any of us.
That was amazing. And then also your sister plays your wife in a wedding scene.
That's right. God, you're good.
And who else we got here? Is it your stepmother and stepsister and grandmother are also in this party scene?
Yeah, in a party scene or in the screening scene. Where that's right, my stepmother, my grandmother, and my half-sister.
Yeah, now how long did it take your dad to get that set together where you shot the party scene? That's all a set, right?
Not very long to put it together because it was his house.
He just woke up and started going to work, right?
Let's just shoot at the house. It was the end of the series. They weren't sure if they were coming back. They probably thought they were, but, you know, and my dad was going to get in his last licks writing and directing on that show. And he crafted that script and got his sons to be in it and shot it in his house. And, you know, it is called Vanity Says the Preacher, so it's all big vein exercise.
You referenced Smallville. What was your experience like coming back into the world of Superman after all those years?
I had a great time on Smallville. The producers were so nice. They wrote a great part for me. And the show was so clever in how they would bring actors in from the movies who had been in Superman movies. And then I came in and played Superman's bio mom.
Right. You get to play Lara, Lara L. That's right.
I got to play Lara, yeah, and really meaty, juicy scenes. It was really lovely.
Yeah, I love how when you look at it, it's the season 7 DVD set. You've got two of those episodes, Lara and Blue. Abandoned, season 10, you came back in episode 8, Smallville for the final season. Terry Hatcher's in that episode as well, so there's a lot of Superman serendipity coming
into effect. Yeah, they were really clever how they handled that.
It's amazing.
Really, really clever. You've been so thorough in this interview, my goodness.
I can't
thank you enough for just the research you've done, my goodness. I don't think I've ever done an interview where someone's been so prepared. I'm just very grateful.
I appreciate that. You've got a lot of background in the Superman universe.
I really enjoyed it. You really are so well prepared. Oh, my God.
I am thorough. That is.
You are thorough. That's a great quality.
I promise, Helen, I'm not a super stalker, just a super researcher. I really hope there's a difference there. Is one man's super research a super stalker? I don't know. I hope not. Oh, well. On to another listener favorite moment. This one is from Don Smith. Don writes, "Hey, Joe, I wanted to compliment your show. I've been downloading the episodes and listening on my drive back and forth to work. Absolutely awesome. Huge fan. Just had to share with you how much I really, really enjoy the show. You are amazing, and the production quality is seriously top-notch. Fave moment, Summer Glau, the entire show. She's amazing. I'm a huge fan. My inner geek exploded with that show. Firefly, Serenity, Terminator, Big Bang Theory. She's one of my all-time faves." Oh, thanks for writing in, Don. Thank you so much for the kind words. I really appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for all the kind words, the feedback. You guys are great. I really appreciate it. And as you know, I'm a huge Firefly fan as well. Loved having Summer Glau on the show, Adam Baldwin, and Marina Baccarin. They were all guests in the lair this year. All right, how about we revisit Summer talking about some serious stunt work? I have to talk about that bar fight scene and then also the final battle in Serenity. What was your training regimen to go through? Because these are epic battles, and these aren't just like you taking on one person. This is like an entire room, and especially with the Reavers, what is it like? Just dozens and dozens of them. So how do you sort of prepare, and what's your background as far as training for these scenes?
Well, when Joss, I remember the conversation when Joss revealed that he wanted River to be a martial arts expert in the movie, and I thought, oh my gosh, this isn't going to go well. And he said he had a plan, and he was going to put me into training, and he had the perfect stunt coordinator to teach me how to do these fight scenes. And I remember my first day at fight camp, and Joss came, and some of the producers from the movie came and watched me try out some moves. And Chad Stahelski, who was the stunt coordinator for Serenity, watched me move. He knew I was a dancer. And he kind of developed a technique of fighting that was a hybrid of different techniques to suit my movement style, to suit the fact that I was a dancer, and to also support the idea that I'm a smaller person, and I'm playing a young girl, and yet I'm able to, dominate in these big fight scenes. So it was important that he find a technique that would seem realistic. And from there, the training was really, really intensive. I worked for a good 6 months before we started shooting.
Oh, wow.
Because Joss really wanted it to look like it was me. And he wanted to make sure that he could set up the camera and he wouldn't have to do a bunch of specialty shots to make it look like I was doing these fights. I did them from start to finish. I learned them like it was a choreographed dance, and I actually made contact with all the guys so that no matter what angle the camera was, it looked like a hit.
You didn't take anybody out for real, did you?
No, I mean, there were a few accidents, but Dad always told me that it wasn't my fault. Oh,
God. I mean, did you put anybody in the hospital with this, or what are you doing there?
No, I learned how to tap lightly.
Okay, all right.
But it was fun.
There's no doubt a lot of my favorite episodes center around the actors and actresses from the movies and TV shows I grew up with. When I'm able to invite one of those guests to the lair for a chat, that is a huge thrill for me. I was raised on a steady diet of Spider-Man, Incredible Hulk, The Greatest American Hero, so many more, you name it. In fact, not only did I get to interview actor William Catt from The Greatest American Hero this year on Comic Book Central, a dream came true at Connecticut Comic Con when I got to moderate a Q&A panel in person with the man himself, William Catt.
Big thanks to Mitch Halleck at Connecticut Comic Con for making that happen. That was a highlight of the year, I've got to say. That was fun. All right, here are a few cool moments from my interviews with William Catt, who talks about getting offered the role of Ralph Hinckley by show creator Stephen J. Cannell, Nicholas Hammond on real Spidey stunts, and Lou Ferrigno with the strange story about his memorable drive home one night after filming The Incredible Hulk. Obviously, at this point, we're coming in after the Christopher Reeve Superman movies. You had George Reeves on television typecast. Were there any concerns at all about putting on spandex, even if it's like, hey, this could go away in a few episodes? I still might be out there forever in this.
Yeah, well, of course, I had all those concerns, and I did pass on it a couple times, and then I was talked into it. And when Steve Cannell, he flew out to New York and he took me out to dinner. He's such a likable, affable, charismatic, and very, very smart and talented guy that it's hard to say no to that when it's sitting in front of you, you know?
So you had passed on it a couple times, but Steven specifically wanted you for the role?
Yeah, God only knows why. I mean, he had something in mind, and I didn't have to audition for that.
Did you ever find out? I mean, did you ask, like, whoa, why me?
I don't know. It worked. You know, it was kind of lightning in a bottle, the chemistry between Bob Cope and myself and Connie Selica. I mean, it was just like, it was pretty magic. Even now when you see it all these many years later, the chemistry is just pretty neat to watch on screen, you know?
You didn't really have to look deep to find motivation for those early scenes when you have the suit on, right? In the pilot episode.
No. When Ralph looks in the mirror and he's got the suit on for the first time and he goes, "Hi, sailor," and he's like, drops his head down. But that wasn't Ralph. That was Bill Catt going, "There goes my career," you know. But
I mean, when you're putting that on, what's going through your mind at that point? I mean, when did you first see the suit? Like, when did you know? Oh boy,
It wasn't but a few days before that, because
you're already locked in, ready to go.
Locked in, and then when I put it on, it's like the reality of it hit me square in the face. It's like, dude, you are a cartoon, man.
It was the strangest thing. I was doing a play at the Mark Tabor Forum in Los Angeles, which is a very good theater. And I was doing a play by Tom Stoppard called Travesties, which could not be further away from Spider-Man if you wanted to make it. And apparently the executives from CBS came to see me in the show, and I got a call to come in and meet them. And they said, "So do you read Spider-Man comic books?" I said, "I've never read one in my life." They said, "Perfect." and I said, "But I'm going to tell you right now, I mean, if you're asking me to be like an Incredible Hulk kind of guy, I just don't think I can do that. But if you want me to try to play him as a real person, as somebody who the audience forgets that he's got superpowers, and they just think they're watching the story of a real guy who's putting himself through college by working at a newspaper," I said, "that I could do." They said, "That's what we want."
Wow. An interesting take right off the bat to show that they were trying to go. Do you think there was a sense that they were trying to get away from the comic books just because they knew they weren't going to have the budget to be able to pull some of that off?
I think that was probably some of it. You know, I mean, my God, you know, when you look back on that show, we were so limited. The technology, of course, was non-existent back then. And our budgets were so tiny, being TV budgets, that really we just had to make do with, you know, with what we could do. And I mean, Freddie, who did my stunts, you know, God bless him. I mean, you know, he didn't have the advantage of a lot of green screen and a lot of CGI. I mean, if there was a scene of Spider-Man coming out of the 69th story of the Empire State Building, they just opened the window and Freddie just went out the window on the 69th floor of the Empire State Building.
This is Freddie Waugh, the stuntman?
This is Fred Waugh, yes, who's, may he rest in peace. Unfortunately, he's just passed.
That's a few years ago, right?
Fred was he had been an acrobat with Ringling Brothers Circus. So, you know, he had incredible balance and he had no fear of heights at all. So you could put him on the edge of any building or suspend him from any building. And he was fine with that. And I remember it used to really irritate me because sometimes when the first episodes aired and people thought, "Oh, they must have just flipped the camera and that's not a real building. That's just somebody running, pretending to be running up a flat surface on the ground and then they just flipped the film." And I thought, no, never, not once ever. That's always a real building, a real roof, and it's either me up there doing a scene with other actors, or if it's, you know, if there's a stunt, then it's Fred.
There's a great story that you told recently on one of Stanley's podcasts about the fact that you were exhausted and decided to leave your makeup on one time. Is that true?
Yes.
Tell our listeners what that story is, because this is hilarious.
Well, one time, it was about maybe 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, I was so exhausted, I didn't want to take the makeup off. I figured just ahead of it, let me just drive home. And the mistake I made is I was driving home, and I was on the freeway, and somebody else driving alongside me on the freeway noticed and saw me and got overexcited and freaked out, so he happened to hit the car in front of him.
You're in full Hulk makeup.
I know, and I said to myself, I need to get home, because the last thing I need is to get pulled over the freeway and see these officers recognizing me and thinking I'm pulling some kind of prank on the way home. I mean, it was an embarrassing situation.
Did you ever find out what happened to the guy? I mean, is he...
Oh, I just kept driving. I mean, yeah.
Could you imagine, I mean, could you, just being in his shoes, could you imagine driving by and there's the Hulk at 1 a.m. driving a car?
I know.
That's fantastic.
My God, it would have been a great opening for a reality show today.
Okay, I don't know if that driver was a fan of Lou's, but I'm sure tonight he's never going to forget. That was a pretty cool story. Hey, something else that's unforgettable, that's when you get to meet the object of your fandom face-to-face. And with so many comic book conventions these days and so many meet-and-greets, the fan experience is greater than it's ever been. I had a chance to talk with some of my guests about interacting with their fans. First up, Erin Gray talks about how her Buck Rogers character, Wilma Deering, affected her personally and how much it impacted the lives of her fans. Then Shazam's Michael Gray on how the lessons taught on his show 40 years ago have stayed with his fans to this day. Next up, the Silver Surfer, Doug Jones, on his free Comic Book Day experience right here in my hometown. Then Max Hernandez on meeting fans at comic book conventions. Smallville's Lex Luthor, Michael Rosenbaum, on a memorable day in Metropolis. And Thor actress Jamie Alexander's unforgettable experience with some very special fans.
Playing a strong woman on Buck Rogers was an opportunity for me to wear a cloak of strength, of this is what a strong woman would be like. This is how she would act. And I wouldn't say that I necessarily was that way in my life. There were times that I was very fearless and strong. And, I mean, leaving home at a young age, traveling around Europe, you know, at 18, you have to have a certain strength and and gumption, I guess. But I was also in a domestic violence situation in my marriage, so there was a part of me that was not strong, that didn't know how to speak up, who didn't know how to fight back, who didn't know how to, you know, ask for what she needed. So,
looking back now, do you see how that character could have been perceived as inspirational for young women?
Absolutely.
And do you get that reaction from fans today?
It's funny. I didn't get it at the time, and I didn't really feel it until I started going out to fan-based events and signing autographs. And then to have fans come up to me and saying, you're the reason I became a police officer. You're the reason I'm a fighter pilot for the Israeli army. Wow. I've had these women come up to me and say that I was their inspiration. I cannot tell you how rewarding that is, because I certainly didn't plan it. It wasn't something that I set out to do, but to realize that I was part of something that helped women to, you know, reach for the stars, literally, and go beyond what their mothers had done in a previous generation was wonderful. How fortunate of me to have played a part in their lives like that. That's my favorite thing about going out to events is to hear that from women.
Well, and what's great about those segments too, and as is typical of a lot of Filmation series at the time, is that's kind of the part of the show that gave kids like myself this little lesson for the week. Here, you know, here's how to treat people right. Here's how to, you know, not get into trouble and do things. How important was it to you to have that as an element of the show? It wasn't just about the action, the adventure, and the flying. Those were all cool things. But how important was it to you that, oh, we're actually teaching kids some things here?
It was important. I enjoyed that. And there was we had a psychiatrist on the show as well, who watched everything we did, a child psychologist, basically, who watched everything we did and made sure everything was approached properly for the education of children. And to this day, I still meet people in their 50s who thanked me for basically setting them in the right direction in life for things that they were educated by from watching Shazam, which it's a pretty good feeling. A guy walked up to me one day, and this huge, burly construction guy, and he screamed, "Oh, my God." And I looked around and I thought, uh-oh. And I, what does this guy want? And the guy's holding a hammer in his hand. And he screamed, "It's you." And I thought, okay, I might have a problem here. But the guy just spent 5 minutes going on and going off the fact that how I changed his life and made him into a better person and set him in the right direction, because he said he probably would have ended up dead doing things he shouldn't have been doing back then. But our shows, the moral values that our shows showed, set this guy, you know, for his future. And that's nice.
A lot of people listening to this podcast go to these comic conventions. Sometimes you get the attention of the celebrities and sometimes you don't. So it's were like making moments for each one. It's like you were spending quality time with them and interacting. And I was just amazed by that. I mean, what sort of spurs you on to do that? Is it just like when you see the fans there and just their passion for your projects? Because there's a ton of projects you've done.
Well, there are. And I think if I'm at a table and there's a line of people waiting to meet me, there was a line outside that I didn't see. So I was taking all this time with people. And finally, I was told, like, you know, there's 30 people outside. I'm like, no. So I had to move along a little faster. But if there's a line of people that are waiting to see me, that means that they've watched my movies and TV shows I've been on, and those are the people that help buy my house for me. So and they've come out to see me today. So that means I want to hug on them and thank them for, you know, I wouldn't have a job without them. So yeah. I don't feel that they owe me anything. They've already given me so much that I like to come out and meet them and. I can put those faces behind the camera the next job I do too. So every time I see, you know, I'm on a big set and I see those cameras, that kind of inspires me if I'm low on energy or I'm kind of like at the end of a long day, an 18-hour day, and I put those rabid, happy faces behind that lens, and it's like, okay, that's who I'm doing this for.
You're doing one of the coolest things I've seen here at the show is that you're just signing for free.
Yeah.
You just showed up and you have fans coming in. So usually you end up like breaking the bank at some of these things.
Well,
I just figure
that, you know, like these people who come to conventions, like they travel to conventions, they park at the conventions, they pay the ticket to get in. So they sometimes come with kids, you know, and then the kids want toys. It's like, you know, they want food. It's like it's like a lot of money. And I just figure I'm in a very fortunate position. Doing what I do, and if I could do it for free, why not? You know, I mean, I'm very lucky. I'm a working actor, and I've been very fortunate. So, again, like if I can give to people, then I can help them out in any way I can. I try to do it, and especially fans. I feel like, you know, they buy the tickets and they, you know, watch TV and they watch the shows and they watch the movies and everything. The least thing I can do is like take a picture with them, not charge them, sign something for them. You know, and it's all good.
In Metropolis, Illinois, I remember the first time you were there, you and Stefan Bender of Superman Returns, he played the young Clark, were there, and the lines just went block after block after block. And I know you had to leave at one point, and there was no way that everybody in line was going to get an autograph. And you and Stefan came out and just walked the line the whole way through. And made sure that everybody got an autograph. Because if they had to wait, there's no way they would have. You guys had
to. You remember that? You heard about that?
I do. I was there. And I tell you, one thing that stuck with me was one of your fans was there, a young man in a wheelchair. And I remember as quickly as you were going through the line, you stopped and just talked to this guy for, you know, you shared some moments with him. And I thought that was amazing.
Well, you know what? That means a lot to me. And I just... I guess the way I was brought up, that's all I know. I just don't know any other way. It just doesn't make sense to me that, you know, sitting there and people that have paid for tickets and are waiting in a huge line, why anybody would not do their best to make sure everybody got, you know, a signature or whatever. And how lucky are we to have people waiting around that want our signature or want to meet us? So I felt like, okay, well, what do we have to do? What are the options? Well, Michael, you have to go catch a plane. Well, I'm going to walk outside. And it just seemed right to me. It just seemed like that this is the way to do it. And I think, you know, we take for granted the fact that we inadvertently change lives. You know, being an actor and, you know, someone who watches Smallville, it's amazing. I've talked about this, but,
you know, I've had soldiers say, hey, we were in Iraq, and this is all we watched with Smallville, and this, like, this really got us through it. And it just, I'm like, what? The impact that you have, that you don't even know you have, what you're doing for people by just getting paid to say some lines and be a part of something is tremendous.
The tagline here at Comic Book Central is where comic books come to life. You have taken this to the highest degree. You recently made an appearance at Children's Hospital Los Angeles in character as Lady Sif. This to me is amazing. You know, back when I was a kid, this happened. You would see, you know, like Jackson Bostwick show up as Shazam, or you'd see Adam West show up, in character as Batman. This doesn't happen anymore.
You know, so I've been trying to do this for a very long time. It's just something that, you know, you always see male superheroes everywhere. They always show up somewhere. They always do something. You always got the guy doing something. You never have a female show up anywhere, like a female superhero. And I thought, you know, there are a lot of young girls that are in Children's Hospital, as well as, you know, the boys. But I just thought, you know, it's so important for them to see a female superhero and somebody who cares about them and somebody who's strong and positive and always, you know, looking on the bright side of things. So I had talked to Marvel about this a few times in the past, but we just never could do it because I couldn't show up in my outfit until after the movie came out. So we never were able to find a way to do it where, you know, the kids could take pictures and that sort of thing, and because it's all so secretive. So I called Marvel and I said, look, I really want to set this up, and I've got some connections with Children's Hospital in Los Angeles, and, let's do this. And they jumped at it. They were like, absolutely. And within days we had a plan, and I said, can you guys donate some posters, DVDs, whatever you guys can get from Marvel? And so they did. And then my management company donated a lot of iTunes stuff, which was really great. And so we went in there, and I went through hair and makeup and put the wig on and got in costume. And walking down the hallway was about the funniest thing ever. All the kids were like, what the heck? And one of the older doctors asked me if I was Xena. So that was kind of amazing. I said, something like that. And
close enough.
Yeah, I mean, close enough, dude, whatever. And so then I just sat with some of the girls and the boys, and I just sat with them. And they were so excited because, you know, they had a screening of Thor: The Dark World at Children's Hospital, but a couple of the kids couldn't make it because they were going through a treatment or, you know, something like that happened. And I won't go into detail about some of them, but some of them missed the screening, and it broke my heart. And I was, like, really upset because I thought, oh, this is something they were looking forward to, and then, you know, something would happen medically and they had to go into surgery or something like that, so they missed it. So I went and saw those kids. One of the kids, oh, he was so funny. His name's Michael. He has a life-size cardboard cutout of Tom Hiddleston as Loki in his room. And I said, how do you sleep at night with that thing looking at you, you know? And he's like, oh, I turn it around to face the window when I go to bed. that's probably good, man. That would scare me if Loki was staring at me while I was trying to sleep. But he's the biggest Thor fan, you know, and I'm working with Tom to try to make a little video for him or something. And he's the one that he missed the screening and wasn't able to see the movie. So I'm working with Marvel to try to get a copy of it, one of the reps from Marvel to go over there and sit with him while he watches it on an iPad or something. But he was so sweet. He was just so happy and excited. And for me, that's the only reason I'm doing what I do. Like, besides making a living, like, that's why I'm doing it. There's no other reason to do it. Like, I love kids, and I've always sort of been attached to the underdog because I was myself quite an underdog growing up. It's just so important to go and show those kids that the world outside of those walls are thinking about them and caring about them. I have so many personal pictures I took with those kids, and, you know, I look at them all the time just to remind me about what's important and that, you know, certain things happening in my life aren't really that big of a deal. So I need to worry less about that and spend more time, you know, showing people that I love them.
That was one of my favorite stories from this past year. Oh, that was amazing. I also noticed that Guardians of the Galaxy's Chris Pratt did the same thing at Children's Hospital a few months ago. He dressed up as Star-Lord for the kids and got to hang out with them. Pretty cool stuff. That's really what it's all about. Bringing comic books to life for the fans, giving them those memorable moments. Ah, good job, guys. Well, Comic Book Central Nation, I thought I'd wrap things up for the day with some fun that I've had with some of the guests over this past year. it's always very cool when the guest kind of plays along and gets into character, you know what I mean? Even if it's just for one of their catchphrases. And the guests here in the lair, I've got to say, they've been very accommodating, especially the voice actors. Here are a bunch of moments to close things out where the guests have gotten back into character. From Fantastic Four February, Jay Underwood, Michael Bailey Smith, and Joseph Culp. From Shazam, Michael Gray. From the Super Friends, Shannon Farnan. Dinah Girl, Judy Strangis. Lois and Clark's Kay Callan and Eddie Jones get parental. Kevin Conroy goes batty. And Michael Rosenbaum seems to have a lot of voices running through his head.
Hey, this is Jay Underwood, Johnny Storm, the Human Torch from the original Fantastic Four movie. And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. Flame on!
This is Michael Bailey Smith, Ben Grimm from the original Fantastic Four movie. It's clobbering time.
20 years later, this is amazing. We can go online and see how you brought one of our favorite villains to life. We love that. And Fantastic Four. Joseph, thanks for taking some time today to hang out in the Comic Book Central lair and to chat about some of these cool projects.
Been a pleasure, Joe. Keep in touch. And there's one thing I want to leave you with that Dr. Doom told me to tell you. Here's to the future, my friend.
You're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. Shazam!
Hi, this is Shannon Farnan, Wonder Woman from the Super Friends, and you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. Great, Hera!
Hi, this is Judy Strangis, Dinah Girl from Electra Woman and Dinah Girl. Electra far out!
You're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Oh, gosh, I hope Clark is eating well.
Oh, Kevin, would you stop worrying?
Kevin Conroy joins us on the show now. Kevin, thanks for taking the time out to join us here on Comic Book Central.
Happy to be here.
Ah, there it is. That's the point. Have you ever used the voice around the house or with friends or to get yourself out of trouble or just to disarm?
It's very good for disciplining children, let me tell you. My friends' kids, they'll often, you know, ask me to... tell him to clean his room, kind of thing. It works on get in there and clean that room.
Before we go, I was wondering if you could just do one quick favor. There's a famous line from one of your episodes. I was wondering if you would grant a wish and repeat it for us. It's in the episode Nothing to Fear. Batman is fighting off the effects of the Scarecrow's fear gas, and he comes through this and he realizes who he is.
I am vengeance. I am the knight. I am Batman.
I started doing all these voiceovers, and they called me in, and I said, hey, do an impression here for this character, Deadshot. Can you, what about your Kevin Spacey or Christopher Walken? Or your, so I would just start doing impressions, and it was just kind of like, hey, just come in here, have a couple of laughs, and we'll pay you.
And Deadshot was Kevin Spacey. You've done sort of a take on that.
Thing where he's like, listen to me, Batman. No, damn it. You listen to me, Joe. There's no swearing on your damn station. You know, he would do this whole thing where he talks like, yes, and then I just did something like that. It was just like a semblance of the character. And it's so funny because I'm friends with Kevin, and I did a couple of movies with him. And whenever I do an impression, he's like, I'll say, you know, listen to me, Kevin. I was thinking we can go to, we need to get some lunch. So why don't you pick me up at 2 and I go, why are you talking like that? And I said, I'm doing an impression of you. He goes, I don't f***ing sound like that. he got annoyed at me. Like, how dare the king of impressions, Kevin Spacey, who does everybody, how dare someone do him? And he got a little annoyed by it. I kind of laughed.
Now, the question, have you ever done Christopher Walken for Christopher Walken?
Yeah, I did a movie called Pool Hall Junkies. On set, you know, I really got to know the real Walken, because everybody would do this like a parody, or they would do this, wow, I don't know, and it was stupid. It was like, that's not how he sounds.
Right.
He doesn't sound like that. He's really subtle. He actually, when he's talking, he'll say, I remember, you know, going up to him and going, hey, Christopher Walken, should I call you Chris? Should I call you Mr. Walken? He goes, I don't know. Call me Flash. And I said, Flash. He did. He said, just call me Flash. This is way before I even got Flash. So I don't know what it meant. And the next day on set, I was with my friend Anson Mount, and I said, Anson, dude, I'm already in with Walken. We already have a thing. I call him Flash. I go, watch this. I go, hey, Flash. And I must have said Flash four times. He never turned around. He never turned around. He looks at me and goes, what? What is he talking about? I don't know, understand what he's talking about. Like, he just completely threw me under the bus. And I knew he did it purposely.
All right, kids, it's that time. The first ever Comic Book Central giveaway. That's right, it's Comic Book Central's anniversary, but I'm giving the gift. As I mentioned a few episodes back, if you wrote in with your favorite moment, I'd pick one listener to score the super cool, super awesome Superman the Movie tie-in, Superman, Last Son of Krypton. And the novel goes to Mariano Santangelo. Congratulations, Mariano. Oh, you're going to love this book. Not only is it one of the few Superman the Movie tie-ins released back in 1978, it's an original story by DC Comics writer Elliot S. Magan, and it contains a bonus 16-page photo album with some spectacular shots from the film. You're going to love it. Again, congrats. Be sure to send me your address, joe@comicbookcentral.net, and Willie Lumpkin will be delivering this super gift right to your door. So many memories, so little time, and our time is at an end for today. But you know what the great thing is? All those classic moments are on the website, comicbookcentral.net. Go back and check out any of the first 49 episodes you might have missed, or subscribe in iTunes. You get the whole first year right there. Speaking of iTunes, got some great news this week. The folks from iTunes reached out and said they'd like to feature Comic Book Central. So I'm working with them on that. More on that news as it develops. And be sure to leave a review if you're in iTunes. I'd love to know what you think of the show. My buddy over at Monster Kid Radio, Derek Cook, did something really cool recently. He put out a 50-review challenge to his listeners. I thought that was a pretty great idea. So if you haven't already, head over to iTunes, leave a review for Comic Book Central. It just takes a minute. I really appreciate it. Let's see if we can get to 50 or even beyond. That would be awesome. Don't forget to follow Comic Book Central on Twitter at ComicBookCTRL. Give Comic Book Central a like on Facebook at facebook.com/ComicBookCentralNetwork. The episode guide is on Facebook. It's in the About section. And be sure to share the Lair. For those of you who've been doing that for the past year, my heartfelt thanks. Again, I cannot express how much appreciation I show for that. There are a lot of you, week in, week out, getting the word out about the show. It does make a difference. For every share, every retweet, that means more potential listeners for the show. And the bigger the show gets, the easier it's going to be to land those guests. So thank you again for helping to get the word out. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep getting the word out. Get your comic book loving friends, your comic book loving family members to subscribe to the show. Talk it up at the comic book shops, the conventions. Everything you do is truly appreciated. Thank you so much, and it is working. Well, folks, that will close the book on year one of Comic Book Central. Hope you had as much fun listening over the past year as I had putting the shows together. I'm going to take a couple of weeks off for a well-deserved break. I'm going to kick back here in the command center of Comic Book Central, watch some flicks, book some more guests. In fact, I've already got a few ready to go already. I'm going to be back better than ever with year two of Comic Book Central. As I've stated all along, each and every one of you is a part of this ride. I can't wait to continue it with you. I will be back on Comic Book Central's new air day. Programming note, Saturday. Yep, show is moving to Saturdays. Cartoon Day back in the day. The next episode will be Saturday, November 22nd. I'm going to be back with more surprises, more fun, more guests as I start year two of Comic Book Central. Until then, have a fantastic fortnight. Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the Lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivations 3.0 Unported License. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Excelsior!